reasons for listening to the show, well, those are your own. But just keep in mind that the views, information, or opinions expressed on the Tuttle Daily Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Yeah, it's called free speech, people.
Nobody's forcing you to listen.
Get ready for your daily dose of Tuttle.
The all-time greatest intern slash producer we've ever had, of course, Tuttle. Tuttle in Florida.
From the Hobo Fish Camp, it's the Tuttle Daily Podcast.
No wonder nobody likes you, Tuttle. Everything's a goddamn debate.
All right, guys, greetings and welcome to another edition of the Tuttle Daily Podcast. I can't get my phone. Oh, so it does sound good. All right, good. Thank you. Thank you, Vulture. I don't know what I would do without my Vulture. Iggy T. Hey, Iggy T, my guest tonight is a Canadian. He has a link tree here, but hold on, let me go to his Twitter. That's where I was able to find out the most. He is from Toronto, Ontario. Maybe he might have listened to me when I was on Bubba's show in Peterborough. I know he's not there. The Jolly Gator. Good evening to all. Oh boy, what a day. What a mother effing day. Tuttle Mark coming in with 100 bits there. Thank you, my friend. So today, you guys know that I've been doing recruiting for a business, and they are needing an IT guy ASAP. I need to get an IT guy. Keith Vina says, what's up, buddy? So I was able to, in less than an hour, because the big boss called me out of the blue. And I did not have the big boss's number. And when he called, I knew who it was. I talked to him. We talked about how important this was. And I keep all the resumes of everybody that I speak to. And I was able to turn around within less than an hour. I was able to get an IT guy in front of him. And that was great. Doesn't sound that stressful, but it does sound stressful when you check out your bank account. So when you're poor, like I've been since I left radio, and I don't want anybody to think I was ever rich working in radio, because right now I'm making the best money that I have ever made in my life. And I'm not trying to floss on anybody. I'm not trying to say, oh, I'm rich, bitch, or whatever. But I was paying for insurance. I had a personal insurance plan that I was paying out of my own pocket for every single month. That's what I was doing. It was with one healthcare provider. Then I got hired. And the insurance was still with the same health provider. So when I got all that signed up and everything, I asked him, I was like, look, I already got a plan with you and stuff. And keep in mind, the one that I was paying out of my pocket was because it was subsidized. It was one of those plans for poor people, which I was. the Living Numbers podcast. You know what, buddy? You know what? I'm going to get with Vulture because I want to get you on the show again. There is another guest that I talked to who is from the United Kingdom that did that movie about the racist groups in the South. I had him on the show. He talked about the movie and stuff. The movie is out now, and I want to get him on. But I also want to get my guy from the Living Numbers podcast. So yeah, I'm not flossing or anything like that, but what I'm trying to say though is, so I had the subsidized healthcare that I was paying for, but when I signed up for the insurance with my new company, they said, oh yeah, the other one will be canceled. It'll be canceled. So I've been at this job for about 2 months now. I got you, Tony, I'll admit, I meet a lot of people and stuff, but Tony, I'll be real. I blanked and I couldn't remember your name. Tony, I'm just being real. It's not that I don't care, but Tony, I have a lot of people on the show. And I know that we had talked about getting you back on, and I want to have you on again. I do. So, Tony, I'm a complete a-hole. I do apologize. So, please forgive me. But today, so I got this new job. I'm making more money. I thought my other insurance was canceled. And I wake up and I check my bank account. You know, when you are poor, you do not check your bank account as much because you know what your bank account is going to be. It's going to be depressing. So when you're poor, you don't check your bank account as much. You just don't. Because I've been there. I've been poor. And I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to buy this candy bar and I'm just going to go up. I'm not even going to check my bank account. I'm going to swipe the card. If it goes through, I get the candy bar. If it doesn't, I just walk away. Bubba lost everything says, hi, brother. What's going on? And you know what? I'm not one of those guys. If you guys are ever looking for a good podcast or whatever, follow my buddy, Tony, the Living Numbers podcast. He has a lot of great guests on. It's a very positive show. It makes you feel good about yourself. Brandon McDonald, he says, it's kind of a game, a shameful one. Buddy, it is. So back to the insurance thing that I was talking about, is that now that I'm making more money and stuff, you want to know what the subsidized health care that I was paying for out of my own pocket did? Now that I'm making more money, you know what they did? They didn't send me anything. They didn't try to contact me. You know what they did? I was paying $73 a month for my personal health care insurance. I got a charge for $473. Luckily, look, once again, like the Living Numbers podcast said, Tuttle flossing. Not trying to floss. If you would have talked to me at the beginning of 2020 and you had said, hey, somebody took an extra $400 out of your account, how you doing? I would be absolutely melting down. I would be absolutely in a meltdown because $400 is a lot of money. And $400 is a lot of money to me right now. So I called them. I was almost to the point of getting everything taken care of. And they put me on hold. I got hung up on. It took every single bit of willpower in my brain to not throw my phone against the wall and break it. And I didn't do it. So I called back again, second time. And hour and a half, that I was on the phone trying to get this thing figured out. And I always have to snap myself back into reality because I do get upset when stuff like that does happen. But this nice woman, and I could tell, and I know some people would probably be like, oh, Tuttle, you're being racist by saying, I know for a fact that this was an African-American woman living in the South. I could tell it just from the accent alone. And I explained to her, and she was like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I live paycheck to paycheck and stuff. So the reason I bring that up is that I really think that you guys, before you get mad at the customer service people, the people that you're talking to on the phone, when you're calling in and you're disputing $400, trust me, the people that you're talking to on the other end of the line, they have a lot of the same struggles that you're going through. And I was able to get it taken care of. But they're also telling me that it's going to be 10 to 15 days before I even get that money back. But now I know that the money's going to come back. I've gotten the confirmation codes. I know who I spoke to. I even got their numbers and everything. And I know that it's going to be there, but in the world we're living in right now, $475, even though that I know that it's coming back to me, it hurts not having those available funds in your bank account. It is just crazy. Keith Vina says ouch, so I'm pretty sure talking about the money. Bubba lost everything. LAMO 2022 customer service. I try to be respectful. I try not to get upset with customer service people. It's really, really hard to do. And if you guys want to call in and you want to talk to me about this topic, you can easily do that. You can give me a call, 407-270-3044. Once again, that is 407-270-3044. And if you don't want to call in, you can easily text there. If you want to text to that number, you can do that. If you don't want to be in the chat room and everything. Keith Vina, are you on Obamacare insurance? At the beginning of the year? Yeah, maybe I was. I don't know. I was paying $73 a month. And then when I picked up this new job that was, I had my insurance through, the same insurance company I had before I started with the company that I'm at now, same insurance, same exact insurance. And when I signed up at the new place, oh yeah, it'll be taken care of. You don't have to worry about the other place. No. I'm not even going to worry about disputing the $73 from the month before. So, but when you charge me $400, no, I'm not going to stand by idle when it comes to that. I'm just not going to do it. Jamie O, hey, Tuttle, hope your day went well. And that's the thing about it. I had a great day. But when you are put on a task that is very, very important at the company you work at, and then you got to deal with that on top of trying to get your $470-something back, that is pretty stressful. The weakest link, $500, is a lot of money to have to wait 2 weeks to be refunded. Exactly. What if I did not have the job that I have right now and I've been saving my money and stuff? What if I didn't have that? A lot of people don't have that luxury. They do not have that luxury at all. Ron Bartosh, what's up, Tuttle from Pittsburgh? What's up, Ron Bartosh? Pittsburgh is one of those places that I want to go to. I used to watch a lot of those cooking shows and food challenges. I've always wanted to go to the Pittsburgh and get an official Permanente Brothers sandwich. Even though that I'm being good, I'm being health conscious, I would eat one of those sandwiches in a minute. I would. Ben Puma, what do you think about Bubba and his track being for sale? Well, for one, I don't know if that is true. I don't know if that's true at all. So, I'm sorry. I'll save my comments for a later date. I will. Hopefully my guest is going to show up tonight, but I do have a couple of stories I want to talk about. I want to talk about, and Ron Bartosz, hold on, I was about to pit my story up. Ron Bartosz says it's not for sale. See, I will read the comments, but I'm not going to comment on something that I don't know is true or not. So, you know, a lot of the people want to jump in. They want to kind of stir stuff up and everything. And I'm just not going to bite on it. But there is a weird-ass story that I wanted to talk about. It's this story where this co-pilot had some problems, or this pilot had some problems with the landing gear. And then when they land, they find out, oh, hey, yeah, the co-pilot, he jumped out of the plane. I just find this absolutely suspicious.
So from inside the cockpit during an emergency landing near Raleigh, North Carolina.
How do you intend to land at Raleigh, Durham?
Get as low as we can, and I guess we're going to put it on the belly.
The twin-engine turboprop plane seen barreling past emergency vehicles before skidding off the runway and spinning to a stop. The plane took off with two pilots.
We had two persons on board.
But landed with only one in.
All right, so what happened? What happened? Because we're going to get more into this story, and this story is, it just does not add up. Could this be a case of somebody trying to commit a murder that is so unbelievable that nobody would ever think that the pilot killed the co-pilot?
Side.
We do have one subject who is not on the aircraft.
Soul number two jumped from the aircraft. Unknown location, did not have a parachute.
Okay. Oh, Tom Delaney. Tom the F racetracks. Tom Delaney, coming in with $2 here on the Tuttle Daily Podcast. If you guys want to donate, you can easily do that. You can do it on YouTube. You can super chat. You can cheer me bits on Twitch. And if you're on Twitch and you want to throw me a subscription, subscribe to my channel. I love the follows and everything like that. But if you want to subscribe, that does help me out. Seriously. I'm doing fine at the other job, but guess what? This is all bonus. This is all bonus. Money I make from the podcast is my date money to try to impress the women or whatever it may be. Don't worry. I don't have a lot of dates, so your money is going to be safe.
Police say Charles Hugh Crux, the 23-year-old co-pilot, either jumped or fell from the plane mid-flight and without a parachute. Now, a deepening mystery over what happened to Crux. There's no
mystery? Yeah. I mean, why did he jump out of the plane? This, whoever the pilot was, you are main suspect number one.
Mention of the pilot exiting the aircraft on the recordings. After an hours-long search Friday, his body found in a backyard, roughly 30 miles from where the plane landed.
We had officers that were responding in the area for the...
All right. Guys, okay. This is coming from somebody that has tried to kill himself, somebody that has tried to harm themselves. Do not jump off of buildings in big cities because you do not know who you're going to possibly fall on. But this just seems really, really suspicious. The weakest link, this sounds like murder to me. Yes, it does. Keith Vina seems awful suspicious to me. And Joe says brutal. Could you imagine if your kids were playing in the backyard or you were having a barbecue outside? And while all this was going on, a body falls from the sky a la Con Air when they threw Dave Chappelle out the landing gear to be able to get a message back. This is absolutely, it's horrendous.
Search and were flagged down by a resident. They had heard something in their backyard.
Crux's family tonight reeling from their loss.
We are totally devastated.
Charlie was born to fly.
He wasn't born to fly. Because if he was, he wouldn't hit that ground as hard as he did. And took him. I know this is such a bad take. He wasn't born to fly. I don't know why you, as his parents, aren't like, yeah, the pilot killed him.
A little kid. It just lit him up. It was always his passion.
The other pilot, whose identity is still unknown, was taken to the hospital and treated for minor injuries. The FAA and National Transportation Safety Board are still investigating.
Yeah. See, I had to cut that story short. Because they, for some reason, a lot of these news websites, they like to put their little things over the top of it and everything. Yeah, no, I'm not having it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know what, I'm just going to hop right into this next story because I can't, I'm not saying that my guest is not going to show up. But I just got to roll into the next story. As bad as the economy has been, and everybody, they want to say we're not in a recession now, but we are. We're in a recession. And a story like this absolutely blows my mind. And I think we're kind of doomed as a society, as a country, when a lot of people are struggling right now, but we're talking about, I know I'm sounding like Alan, we're talking about practice here. We're talking about practice. No, we're talking about the metaverse here, people. We're talking about the meta.
Would you like to hang out with friends, attend concerts with stars like Travis Scott, Post Malone, and Ariana Grande, take yoga classes, and you guessed it, shop right from home? You can in the metaverse, a virtual online world.
I've purchased and acquired thousands of digital pieces of clothing.
All right, so do you guys realize what's going on the metaverse? That people are living their real lives in an alternate reality that's on the computers. It kind of sickens me. It does. 'Cause there's a lot of people out there in the world. There's a lot of people out in the world that are really, really struggling. And it's just, people are spending money buying virtual real estate. People are buying virtual clothing. People are buying virtual homes. People are buying virtual Chipotle. And everybody's like, oh, this is an investment.
Kevin Clark is an avid metaverse shopper. This is his avatar. He spends about 4 hours a day in the digital world.
This is just one of the many outfits that I have. I spent probably $5,000 to $8,000.
What the fuck is going on when people care more about a virtual world instead of the real life? I've talked about this before. You know, I talked about this on yesterday's show. I talked about how people look down on the homeless, how people judge the homeless, thinking that they're lazy and this and that. I really almost think that the homeless have it figured out. I really think that the homeless has it figured out, because why are we working our fingers to the bone just to struggle more? And then you got people like this that's spending like $8,000 on virtual clothing, virtual this, virtual that. I don't know. I know that I probably sound like the old guy, old people that's just screaming at the sky and everything. But man, oh man, are we just screwed as a society.
Just in the last 2 years.
That's money Kevin spent on clothes he only wears in the metaverse. Senior media and tech correspondent Julia Borston reports on the metaverse for CNBC.
Why do you think people want to spend real money on digital assets, things they can't have in real life?
People are spending real money in the metaverse. They want to have an experience that's more like their real life experience.
Am I the only one that has a problem with what they just said? That they're willing to spend all this money in the virtual world. Yes, I know that. And I don't want anybody to think that I don't realize that there is some type of value for it. But man, oh man. No wonder we're not having these personal connections. Wonder why we have so many people that are just disassociated with life, that they would rather living in a virtual world instead of having real world connections and experiences with people. Raymond B, we are just a blip in the Milky Way. Whether you believe in God or not, we are living in the end. We could be. We all could be living in the, but this is just, it makes me feel bad about the future. It really does. Iggy T, I would be going on real vacations, LOL. Exactly. Like, I know that they're trying to say that a lot of this stuff has value and everything. It does have value, but man, what are you missing out on? You know what? Dave Bowers writes, each generation is getting more whack. I think you might be right. Michael White writes, Ready Player One time. David Bowers, Generation X was the best non-pushy generation. And Musty also writes, I'm not convinced on this meta stuff. I'm not as well. Everybody wants to talk about privacy and stuff. What do you think that this is going to do to the whole privacy thing? We are just get. And the last thing that I wanted to be as a podcaster is a political or conspiracy theory. I'm just talking about my thoughts, people. I really don't care. I really don't give a fuck what any of you guys are doing. I mean, I not in a bad way, like I don't care about you, but what you do in your own personal life, that's on you. It really, really is. But let me go back to Dave Bauer's comment. Dave Bauer, Generation X was the best non-pushy generation. I'm a part of Generation X, but I will say this about Generation X. We lived in the sweet spot. Generation X lived in a sweet spot when it came to generations. We are in our high school years and stuff. We lived in a generation where at very best, you had your parents gave you a beeper or a pager. Your parents, they could afford it. They would get you a pager or whatever it may be. And then they would text you and then you needed to call them back in a certain amount of time. Back in Generation X, when you're in Generation X, you had to be an absolute idiot. If you're a Gen Xer and you got caught, doing something bad as a Gen Xer, you're the dumbest person in the world. I will say that. I will say that because your parents could let you out, let you ride your bikes around. You could tell them you're going somewhere and you just had to be back at a certain time. And if you did call them and like, hey, I'm staying at such and such place, and they agreed to that, you could do, the world was your oyster. You could do whatever you want to. You could stay out. You could party all night. You could drink. You could wake up hungover as fuck in a field in the middle of Volusia County, and your parents would have never, ever known. Guess what? We didn't have. I think my guest is coming on. Hey, how are you, my friend? You there? Can you hear me? Hello. Are you there, my friend?
I am there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you, sir?
All right. So before we get into it, and this always happens with my guests, I mean, you got a pretty nice setup there, man. That studio looks good. It's not a green screen and everything like I have.
I didn't realize it was a green
screen. No, it is. It is. You know, I consider myself like the MacGyver of sound studios and stuff. Like I got pillows that I've thumbtacked up against the walls and everything just so I don't get an echo and everything.
Right.
Yeah. Can you turn? The audience says kind of difficult to hear you. I got you potted up all the way on my board right now. So,
hold on one second.
I don't know if you can jack your voice up there a little bit.
How about now?
Oh yeah, that sounds much better. Yeah. Sounds much better. All right. So
thanks for having me, man.
All right. So I always this is like a running gimmick when it comes to my guests and everything. Yeah. I always mess up on the name. Okay, and then now the last name I can get, okay, is I'm gonna take a stab at it, okay?
Let's see.
All right, Dejan.
Pretty much, yeah. Dejan.
Dejan.
That's actually my middle name.
So okay.
My artistic moniker is my first and my middle name. My real first and my middle name. So my first name is Aris.
Aris.
My middle name is Dejan.
Aris Dejan.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Darius. So, Darius. All right. So, before, because I want to hop in. I want to bring you in on the topic I was talking about before you came on. Before we get into that, tell my audience a little bit about yourself and how they can check out any of your stuff.
Sure. Well, first off, my name is Aris Dejan. I'm a recording artist, pretty much an all-around creator from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And, you know, I don't really like to define myself by what I do, but just how I view myself. I'm just a creator. I'm just a person who loves to be alive. I look at myself as a being, and I'm grateful for everything that I have, the ability to walk and talk and to be on platforms such as this to just share perspectives and to pick brains. And I love art. I love creating. I look at everything as art. So I have a podcast and I do music and all that, but those are just extensions of who I am. So, yeah.
All right, Aris. So I got a lot of Canadian people that watch. You know, when I was on terrestrial radio from like, I think 2019, the radio show that I worked on down here in Florida was heard in Peterborough, that area.
Yeah.
Do you know where Peterborough is?
I know where it is. I've never been actually. And, that's a place that I would like to visit. Like it's driving distance. I could drive there. But I've never been to Peterborough myself. No.
Yeah. I mean, were you born in Canada?
I was born in Canada. Yeah, I was born in Toronto. My mother, she raised me in Niagara Falls. So we were born in Toronto, but she didn't want us to be raised in the city. So she moved us a bit out. And I grew up in my younger years in Niagara Falls, going to school over there. And then we came back later on to Toronto.
Niagara Falls seems like a touristy area because I've been in Central Florida all my life, and we got Disney, Universal Studios, SeaWorld, and stuff. Do you ever get sick and tired of the tourists that come, or are they always like on the United States side of Niagara Falls?
It's mostly on the United States side. Like especially for me, it's like a second home, right? So when I do go over there, it's like I know the area like the back of my hand. So it's just like another place I call home, but it is very touristy. It can be, especially when you're not from there. But for those who are from there, it's just home, you know, which I'm sure it's like that for you, right?
Oh, it is, you know, the tourists sometimes. Aris, so before I brought you on, I was talking about the metaverse on Facebook and everything. And they're doing these stories about, oh, you can go on the metaverse, you can buy Gucci bag, Gucci clothes on the metaverse, you can get this, you can go to Chipotle on the metaverse. And I know, like, look, I know some of that stuff does have value, but I mean, I would almost think after the pandemic and stuff and all the financial hardship that people are having, don't you think that people look at people that go in the metaverse as just like, I'll say it, douchebags? Like, I'm just saying it, because there's so many people that are having a hard time feeding their family, keeping the electric on and all this stuff, and you're going on the metaverse and you're buying Gucci shit and you're going to fake Chipotle, even though in the metaverse, the Chipotle you get there doesn't give you explosive diarrhea and stuff. Can you see why some people would be like, yeah, those are douchebags?
Well, I would take it a bit further, and you know, the way I view it is like it's a form of escapism, and I'm not really one to kind of feed into that, you know, like the whole meta thing, I don't really, it's not something that I would partake in, because to me, I look at it as a form of escapism, and it's like, how much more are we trying to escape from reality in this life that we're living? We're not even able to handle the things that are going on in our realities. So what we try to find other layers to, you know, drown ourselves in and live within. And it's just something like, and I don't judge people who take drugs or anything like that. You know, the work.
I don't either. They're self-medicating because of all the issues that are going on, trauma that's happened to them.
In reality. Exactly. Their reality. And we may never be able to see from their perspective, you know, the things that they're going through and why they indulge in those things to escape. But we have to really start looking at escapism and what that really means for us, and why are we trying to escape? You know, why are we not equipped enough or strong enough to deal with our realities? Why are we always trying to go someplace else and exist in other worlds when we have a world right here that we can adjust in and learn from and you know, fix ourselves in? But
no, I agree. I agree. But I mean, we've also been living in a world where it's like, oh, if you're having a hard time, just suck it up, be toughen up. You need to pick yourself up from the bootstraps and all that stuff. And, you know, mental illness is something that we don't talk a lot about, especially here in the United States, but all over the world and everything.
Especially and, amongst men, right?
Yeah, men. I mean, a lot of people think that I'm being chauvinistic when I talk about that type of stuff. But as a man, especially living in the South in America, you're, you know, and I'm not saying our parents were wrong or whatever, but when you go and talk to them, it's like, oh, I'm depressed. Well, what do you got to be depressed about, boy? Just, you get fed, you got clothes, you go to school. That's all you got to worry about. What do you got to be depressed about? Be happy.
Oh, man. It's a generational thing, man. They'll never understand that, like, the time that they came up in is very different from the time that we're coming up in and the things that we're exposed to. But I still don't feel like escaping is the right way to deal with those things. But I also don't think that the concept of sucking it up and being a man and don't cry, I don't think that those are the answers either. We really have to find, and I'm no expert, this is just from my experience and from the work that I do.
Of course.
We have to find ways to really, you know, deal with our, I'm going to say it, deal with our shit, you know?
Yeah, no, you can say whatever you want to, man. Yeah, just let it rip.
And I'm guilty of not, you know, like I get hurt, you know, I get into slumps and stuff like that. And I'm always trying to maneuver and figure out how to get out of it, you know, and it's a day-to-day struggle in this life that we live. It's just what life is about, ups and downs, roller coasters. But a lot of us don't know how to deal with those things or have the channels. Like you and I, for example, we have platforms that maybe we could speak on. And maybe this is a form of therapy for us.
Like, oh, it is for me. Yeah, it definitely is for me.
But a lot of people don't have something like this. So what do they go to next? They might indulge in some things that aren't so good for them to numb that pain or that sadness or hurt, you know, or from the breakups or family issues. So we got to find ways and different channels to help ourselves.
Hey, Aris, and I don't want anybody to think like this is just turning into, you know, an anti-female type thing, but
No.
But do you think that we have kind of gone to one direction so much that it's kind of like, fuck a man's feelings, fuck what he's going through, and stuff, and because it's kind of like, and I do believe that a lot of the ladies have gotten the raw end of the stick of whatever it may be, but do you also think at the same time that men are just kind of sometimes a casualty at points? Like, they don't get the benefit of the doubt. They don't get to show their true feelings and stuff when it comes to that, because it makes them look like lesser of a person.
Well, I think we've done it to ourselves, both men and women. Like, I don't think it's, I think it's always been like that, to be honest. It's just that we're seeing it more so now, especially with the social media stuff and cancel culture. And, you know, there aren't many, many organizations for your average heterosexual male, but at the same time, it was sort of the hierarchy and stuff like that was created by males, you know, white males specifically. So women have always felt less than. So there's always been this imbalance in between when it comes to male and female. And men have a lot to do with the whole, you know, suck it up, boys don't cry culture. But I feel like we've done it to ourselves over time. We're seeing a bit of a shift, and at the end of the day, women actually like men who are more sensitive.
No. Man, like, you know how many times that I've been told, like, and it's not because of me. Look, I'm a nerd. I'm very awkward. I like being by myself, but I also don't like being alone. And then, you know, I was taught growing up by my father to respect women. You're polite, you're nice. And I became friends with this one girl. Her name is Addie. She's from the New York area, came down here. I just happened to meet her. And we've become like best friends and everything, okay? But she told me that when she first met me, my politeness, my niceness came off a little like I had ulterior motives, or I was being creepy, or whatever it may be. And that I was like, I'm glad that we became really, really good friends, but it was kind of like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, like, what is a man supposed to do? You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But maybe if I change what I said earlier, like, maybe the right woman, the woman who has been raised a bit differently in the right way, I find they'll respect a man who is in tune with his emotions and is a bit sensitive, because that's just who we are as people, as beings. We're supposed to be sensitive. We're supposed to feel. We're supposed to express ourselves, male or female. And it takes a real person to acknowledge that and recognize that. So it's all about finding your person or people, the right people to be around who understand that. Because it's the people who are kind of brainwashed, who don't like stuff like that, who kind of shun that. Like, the whole boys don't cry culture, it's not a good thing. Just because majority of the world has been like that and have pushed that onto men, it doesn't mean it's the right thing.
Yeah.
So I think when we find people who appreciate honesty, who appreciate openness and respectfulness and all of that and sensitivity, you know, those are the people you got to keep around you. You don't want to impress anybody. If a girl doesn't appreciate how nice you are, fuck her, man.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the content you're putting out. Tell me about the music. Tell me about all that stuff. What are some of the messages and everything that you're trying to get out there?
Well, similar to the things you and I are discussing today, you know, I just want to I do my best to speak from the heart, and the conversations that I have with people on the Who and How Club, which is the podcast right here. It's just, you know, I focus on who people are and how they became the who's that they are. So just speaking about their brains, how they think, you know, and what got them to the point that of where I'm seeing them at today. Like, you and I are meeting today for the first time, but I know there's more to you, and that journey is what I'm interested in. What makes you think the way that you think? What experiences have you been through to get you to the point that you're at today? And what's next for you? You know, because tomorrow is going to come, next week is going to come. You may not think the same way you think today, next week, or 2 months from now, and that's going to be based off of your experiences or your self-reflection. So even in my music, it's very self-reflective, and I talk about my experiences. I don't, you know, I think we could all just learn from one another if we do our best to be open.
I agree with you. Well, I mean, this, when I do my interviews, I like to know the basic info and stuff. I don't like to do a lot of prep. I like to know, and just my interviews be like a conversation, meeting somebody off the street, kind of getting to know them a little bit, and then talking about it. And I think that's why a lot of people like the interviews and stuff that I do, because it's just a conversation. I know the gist of what you're about and everything, but I like to hear from you. That's why at the beginning of the show, I give my guests the floor to be able to tell people a little bit about themselves.
100%. I think, you know, us being strangers, it shouldn't develop a barrier for us to not be able to speak with each other or one another. You know, a lot of people are afraid of other people because they don't know them or they're not a part of their inner circles. But that's like one of the joys of life. Like, I don't know you, but I get an opportunity to know you, and in this moment, and we could all learn from one another, even if we don't know each other.
Yeah. You know,
in depth. Well,
so what are some of the big issues that you guys are paying attention to up in Canada right now? Is the monkeypox hitting Canada at all right now?
Nothing crazy right now. There are a lot of weird situations, like carjackings right now. A lot of carjackings are kind of...
How do they carjack? You guys are strict on guns up there, right? Or no?
Yeah. We had a very unique situation in the news about a week and change ago where a woman, her car got taken from her on the highway by a lady who was on a bike, like a regular bicycle. Mm. She got off her bike waving for help. And, you know, the nice Canadians that we are.
You know how many people get mad at me? I have a do not get involved policy. Like, seriously, I don't. I know a lot of people get, if I'm at the beach and I see somebody out there drowning, no, I'm not swimming out there to save that person, because guess what? I got a family. I got people that depend on me. And you know what happens when you try to save somebody from drowning? They pull you down, they sink you. If a woman is broke down in the middle of the road and she needs help pushing her car off the road, nope, sorry, don't help you, because guess what? In Florida, we got a lot of distracted drivers, and I'm not putting myself in that situation to get run over. It's just, I'm sorry. I know it seems callous. Some people hate me for that. It's just the way that I feel.
What are your feelings on, like, let's say you're in traffic and there's a guy or a girl who has a sign, you know, like, I'm living on the streets right now, could use some change. Are you the type to give, like,
No. No. If I'm in traffic, I'm definitely not giving any money. But a lot of people get this kind of screwed up, because I was institutionalized for a little bit. I know a lot of people self-medicate, do this, do that. And some, for the most part, everybody thinks that homeless people that are begging are just lazy. They're lazy, they don't want to work, all that stuff. Now, sometimes that might be true, but at the same time, I've just being in radio broadcasting and stuff, I like to talk. I like to hear people's stories. And I just tell people, don't judge. You don't know what their story is. You don't know what type of trauma they had in their past. You don't know, like, if they can't get higher because they have a mental illness or something like that.
Yes.
And, like, there's a couple of homeless people in the area that I live in that they never ask me for money. They'll say, hey, you know, here in Florida, it's really hot. And this one guy, his name's Andy. Andy, he'll ask me every once in a while. He doesn't bug me all the time. He says, hey, man, can you get me a Hershey's chocolate bar and an orange Gatorade?
Yes.
I get it for him whenever I can. If I got some extra money, I'll get it for him. And I'm not going to talk about his story, but, like, he's had some bad things that have happened to him. Andy's not out there stealing, robbing, doing whatever. He just wants to be left alone. And if somebody wants to help him out or somebody's kind enough to talk to him, he'll take the help. And that's the way that I feel about that.
Yeah, everyone has a story. Like, that's the work that I do. I work with the homeless population, working in shelters and managing shelter sites and stuff like that.
And a lot of it comes down to mental illness. It does.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. In 2019, I tried to harm myself. Luckily, I was unsuccessful. I got Baker acted. I was in the hospital. It was the worst 11 days of my life, but it was a very eye-opening experience because I'm very inquisitive. I talk to people. And a lot of the people that were in there, they had addiction problems, and it just wasn't because they were scumbags. It was because that they were trying to numb the pain of the trauma and stuff that they've been in.
I have a question for you, if it's okay for me to ask.
No, you can. I'm an open book.
Are you happy that you're still here?
Yeah, I am.
Good.
I am, because... You know, At the time, I was not thinking, but I panicked at the time. Talked to my mom, my dad. My dad's no longer around now, but I talked to my mom and dad, and they were just like, you know, you don't realize what that would have done to us. And they weren't telling me that in a way to make me feel bad. It was just like, we're glad you weren't successful. We hope you never do it again. And maybe you weren't thinking about it. They weren't saying that out of a place to try to make me feel bad for what I tried to do. It was just like, do you realize what that would have done to us?
Mm. And were you I'm asking because I've been there, you know? So were you, and I have felt myself that, like, you know what? I'm just kind of tired of being here. Was it one of those? Like, you were tired of being here and like, you don't want to go through it anymore?
Because I was here in this country, we over medicate. I was on some medications that I probably shouldn't have been on. I was on some mood stabilizing drugs, and then I was drinking on top of that. I wasn't getting a lot of sleep. I just woke up one morning. It wasn't something that I've been planning. I just woke up and I just felt like an empty vessel. Like, I felt, and I'm not a religious person. I don't believe in souls and all that stuff. But if I was going to describe it to him, but I just felt empty. I just felt like empty inside. I tried to shake it off. I went to the mirror, put water on my face. I didn't even recognize myself, and I freaked out, and I was unsuccessful, went into the radio show that day. They could tell something was wrong. I talked about it. I admitted what I did. Everything worked out for a reason. It did. And it was stupid. I got off of all those mood stabilizing drugs. I've been sober now since the end of 2019. And it's been difficult. getting off of those mood stabilizing drugs were harder than getting off the alcohol, in my opinion.
Well, I'm happy you're here, man.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And look, I'm sorry if I'm just, like, bumming it out, but I've always just been real about talking about stuff.
Oh, man. Listen, and, I know you say you don't believe in God and stuff like that, which I understand, but
No, go ahead. I don't want you to think like I look down on people that are religious. I don't.
Right.
I do not. Like, I come from a place, the reason I hate organized religion is the abuse to the children and stuff. And I just, I don't look down on people. If religion makes you a better person, then good for you. Do I believe in religion? No, I don't. But if it makes you a better person, what you do in your personal life, I don't care.
Yes, definitely. And I agree with you. I'm not into organized religion either. And I have my own unique perspective on my beliefs. And every time I share it, a lot of people feel uneasy because they don't know how to fit it in a box, you know? But I have my own personal beliefs. And I do believe that I get messages sometimes. And I did get a message it was either yesterday or the day before, because in 2020, I almost I've spoken about this on my show, like I almost died.
Yeah. And can I ask from what?
I think I was having.
Was it a panic attack?
I thought it was a heart attack.
But they
couldn't define it.
I remember the first panic attack I had. Like, nobody that's living knows what it's like to die. Like, I had my first panic attack from anxiety and stuff. And it's a weird thing when you say, "Oh, I felt like it was hell." Well, how do you know you felt like you were dying if you never died before? And I just like, I just knew it's just this feeling of impending doom.
And you let go. You're like, okay.
Yeah, you're like, you resign to the fact, I'm about to die. I'm just going to sit in this chair, and you just give up.
Well, I fell off the chair, and I couldn't move. It was like I was seeing me, but not as myself. It's like I could see everything going on, and I was crying profusely, but with no emotion. Like, I was stuck. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, my aunt and my uncle were in the room, but it was like during Thanksgiving dinner, and I fell off the chair, and I don't know what it was, but I was done, and I was letting go, and I was blacking out. And I got a message a couple days ago as sort of like a reminder saying, you know, like, you're still here. Mm-hmm. Like, you're still here. You've been given like another chance to live, you know, because sometimes I forget about that moment. That moment made such a difference in my life.
Yeah.
But because it's like a couple of years ago, I forget. You forget how far you've come, or like moments in your life that like remind you, like, hey, if you've made it out of that, you could definitely make it out of this. This is nothing. So you made it out of that.
So what do you believe in though? Like, what was talking to you? What was giving that message?
No, it was just a message I came across online.
Oh, okay.
Like a post. But I do believe that some of those messages, or like sometimes, you know, when I'm driving, like I pay attention. So I see certain things or whatever, and I take it as like I'm supposed to see that. But I believe that, you know, I was created. I don't necessarily call it God. I might call it God sometimes, for lack of a better term. But I don't know. I just feel like I'm an artist. I'm a creator. So if I create, I must come from a creator as well. So I must be someone's creation.
Well,
you know, that's how I look at it. Everything is art, you know, is art. Conversing is art. Our ability to voice things and exchange and communicate this way, this is an art form. It's a lost art form, in fact. So, yeah.
I don't think we'll ever understand. Like, everybody's like,
I feel like we will when we die. When we pass away, we might get some answers.
Well, I mean, this is the way that I always feel. This is what I believe in, okay? I believe in energy never dies. Like, energy always gets recycled. If you look up into the stars, I'm big into science and all that stuff. When you look up at the stars and, you know, with this James Webb telescope that's come out, we're looking at the same things, the same atoms, the same elements that make up those stars is what we're made up of. And then when those stars die, they spew out their guts and they form new stars and stuff. I have a hard time believing in a creator. Somebody right. that is knows everything that has happened, everything that is happening, and everything that's gonna happen. Because I just feel like with as bad as things are right now, if there is a creator that's in control of everything, then he's not a cool guy with everything we're going through right now.
Jeez. I don't disagree with that sentiment at all. I wouldn't disagree. It's I question things, you know, like I think that's our purpose, to question it all, question mm-hmm. existence, even like, why are we alive? Like, who put us here? Did we just show up one day and just, you know, like, even though you believe, or someone might believe, you should mm-hmm. still be able to question it as well. And if you have to denounce sometimes, do it. Like, I've had moments where I was angry with my creator and upset, mm-hmm. you know, and like, it's like a relationship, but to keep going and to keep living, you must have some sort of hope in something, or faith in something, even if it's just yourself, you know, one no. that's keeping you to want to continue. Because the whole world, if you think about it, the whole world is full of people who want to be alive. Like, you could easily mm. end it. I could end my life today if I really didn't want to be here.
Yeah, but I mean, But is that just because of our animal genetics telling us our survival instinct? Is that the reason why? You see what I'm saying? Like,
maybe not for you and I. You and I are a bit more intuitive or aware, self-aware mm-hmm. of what's going on. So we might have made the conscious decision to stay. For some people, maybe it is. Maybe it's a societal thing. Maybe they've been brainwashed to think that they have to be alive, because that's the cool thing to be, right?
No, it's great. I mean, I love it. Well, Aris, before I let you go, tell my audience, I have all the links and everything, how people can find you. So I'll put that in the description of the show, but I want to give you the floor before I let you go.
Yeah, sure. Once again, thanks for having me, everyone. My name's Aris Dejean, and you can find me at The Who and How Club. On all social media platforms and podcast platforms. So that's The Who, ampersand How Club, or just look me up on all social media platforms at Who How Club, whohowclub.com, also at Only One Aris, O-N-L-Y, the number one, A-R-Y-S, and you're bound to find me on any one of those to connect and to listen to the show.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on the show, man. I hope you have a great night, and let's keep in touch, well, okay? I'm going to follow you on social as soon as I get done with the show, okay?
Yeah, and I'd love to have you on my platform as well. I'll talk further about who you are and stuff.
Let me know.
I got 100 questions for you.
So. All right, so I'd be more than happy to come on, my friend. I hope you have a great night, okay?
You too. Let's touch base.
All right, man. Bye. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here. Hopefully you guys enjoyed tonight's show. Hopefully you guys stay safe, and I will talk to you tomorrow.